Mark Kalansky is a New York Times bestselling author who has written many books on single subjects, cod, salt, the big oyster, to name a few. But in his latest, co-authored with his daughter Talia, he's expanded the scope considerably, writing about cuisine from across the globe in the form of a cookbook called International Night, A Father and Daughter Cook Their Way Around the World. It's a mix of recipes and stories from Mark's travels as a journalist and writer, and draws from techniques he's learned when he was a professional chef. It's published by Bloomsbury, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mark and Talia Kalansky to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Talia, how old are you?
14.
Don't most kids of your age resist eating anything that looks strange?
I don't think so. I think most kids, especially if you make the food, I think it makes it even more fun to eat it. If you involve your hands, you get to squish something or cook something, I think it stir something, it makes it more fun to actually get to eat it.
Because you understand the process that brought it to the table. When did you first start cooking international foods with your father?
I think I was around 9.
Yeah. I mean, when we started this game of International Night.
And how does it work?
I spin the globe. She closes her eyes. She points her finger at a certain spot on the globe, and wherever her finger lands,
that can be kind of scary at times.
It can, yes.
Well, sometimes you wind up in the middle of the ocean, so because
Then it's a redo,
and you just respin it.
And if it's a place where we've already done, we redo it.
Were you cooking together before you started International Night?
Yes, we've been cooking together as far as I can remember, especially desserts. Anytime that it's a birthday or some kind of celebration, we'd make cake or some kind of dessert because, well, we love dessert.
And were there any countries when you started doing this that you were nervous that you might land on?
I don't.
You're just totally open to
it. There were some countries we were nervous that we did land on.
Because then you started looking into the cuisines?
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of the 52 nights, something like 41 of them are places I've been. But when we landed, for example, in Kazakhstan, oh my God, what do you do?
So was it difficult finding traditional Kazakh ingredients?
Kazakhstan was a little difficult, and she kept landing on it. I mean, we only did it one time, but for some reason, you know, it's like one out of three spins she would land. I don't know what it is.
It's a very big country in the center of the globe and a very easy to land on spot.
in South Central Asia.
Right.
Is the food like Turkish food or?
No. It's like a cross between Russian and Mongolian.
And I gather a lot of it involves horse meat. You can't get that at your local key food.
Yeah, there's horse meat and a lot of mutton. But, you know, Leonard, the decision that had to be made with this whole project is, do you go for authenticity or do you go for good meals? And we went for good meals. So we would, you know, if it was mutton, we used lamb because lamb is better than mutton, and we used beef instead of horse. And the most extreme example was Mongolia night. And I actually have been to Mongolia, and there's only one Mongolian dessert I know, and it's this pastry that's called a shoe. It's kind of shaped like a shoe, and they have these wooden stamps that they shape it with. And then you put yogurt on it, and then you cover it with, like, cheap, horrible, hard candy. And, oh, God, this isn't going to work. So, you know, we did the shoe part. That was fine. And then I thought, well, instead of yogurt, what's wrong with vanilla ice cream? And instead of hard candy, why not caramel sauce? So that's what I mean about the choice between authentic and good. But, you know, where possible, where we could get something that was authentic, that was really good, we would do it.
How did this whole thing start, Talia?
It wasn't originally supposed to be a book. It was just an idea. I mean, he cooks dinner for our family every night, so we've always had cooking as part of our meals. And it was just an idea, a fun thing for us to do, where I'd be involved, I'd spin the globe, and then I'd have an idea of where the food was coming from.
And the ritual got more elaborate.
Have you been doing this?
The 52 nights took us 3 years. You know, the idea of the 52 nights is that it implies you do one a week, right. Which was our original idea. We would do it on Friday nights, but you can't really do it every week if you're traveling or something.
And have you traveled to some of the places that you've had these cooking nights about?
Some of them I have traveled to. The only one that we traveled to specifically for the book was we did go to Morocco. We went to Marrakesh.
Now, Morocco is famous for its cuisine. What makes Moroccan food special?
I mean, it has such a such a sense of spices. It has so many different spices that are used. And you have tagines where the flavors are kept inside of it. So it just, it's very flavorful.
And it's in a very old-fashioned way of cooking where everything is done by hand and takes a lot of time. And it's not fast food.
It's North African, but it's also got a French side to it.
It has a French side, and it has a black African side, and, you know, an Arab, of course.
And you went to a cooking school?
The only cooking school in Morocco. They invited us.
We spent our mornings cooking food, and then we'd end up eating that food later that night for dinner.
What cooking techniques do you think you've learned in a class like that that you can apply to the rest of your life?
Well, in that specific case, I learned how to use knives a lot more than I had before.
What had you been doing before? Mostly squishing the food, as you said?
I had a mistaken idea that knives would be dangerous for her. So when it came to any knife work, I did it.
But knives can be dangerous for everybody.
Absolutely.
I've been known to cut myself and burn myself.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember when I first started as a professional cook, the first few days were a little tough on the hands. But, you know, these people in Morocco, they didn't mess around. They just handed her a knife and said, here, chop this. And she returned with all 10 fingers. So I thought, well, fine.
What dishes did you make in Morocco?
We learned a bunch of different kinds of tagines, both vegetable, chicken. Two of some of my favorite recipes from the book are these two salads that come from our Moroccan night. One is made with oranges, olives, and argan oil. And argan oil is comes from this tree that only grows in Morocco.
Can you buy it here?
You can buy it here. The only thing is you want to make sure it's incredibly popular in cosmetics, in hair supplies, and all and things like that. So if you're going to use it for cooking, you want to make sure you buy argan oil specific
the right
for
one.
Cooking.
Yeah.
Edible.
And then sardines, a common ingredient throughout this book. You had to learn how to fillet a sardine?
Well, she already knew. You know, this was her thing, one of those inexplicable things about kids. From when she was very small, she always loved fresh grilled sardines. And, you know, we go to Saint-Jean-de-Luz in Basque Country a lot, and, you know, she'd sit there and fillet her sardines at the plate, and the French people would look over in awe. But it was one of her early manual skills in life.
My guests are Mark Kalansky and Talia Kalansky. Their book, their collaboration, which includes 250 recipes, is called International Night. A father and daughter cooked their way around the world. Do you remember at what age you first ate a sardine?
I must have been 4 or 5. I don't remember exactly my first sardine. I know that in traveling to Saint-Jean-de-Luz, it's a very common dish there. And I ordered it one night, and I fell in love. I thought it was so good, and it became my thing, the grilled sardines.
Mark, a lot of people complain that at a certain age, their kids start rejecting everything that's put in front of them. If it looks strange, if it smells strange, if their classmates are not eating it. How do you get past that? In your case, I guess it's just engage Talia from a very early age in the process, but
yeah,
not everybody can do that.
I mean, one of the ideas in my mind behind this book was encouraging the notion of cooking with your kids. Cooking with your kids is a great thing to do, not only for the relationship with food, but it starts a dialogue on a lot of things. If you have to get kids involved with food, You know, if you don't live in New York City, a great thing to do is grow food. You know, kids like things that they grow.
What happens, talking about that, when you land on the United States after you spin the globe?
Well,
do you try to go as close to where your finger lands, the nearest big city?
No, we redid it. There's only two U.S. places we did that we decided were exotic enough that they would fit in an international book, and those were New Orleans and Hawaii.
So spam, because Hawaiians eat a lot of spam.
We missed that, yeah.
There are many recipes they
call. Are you telling us about your Hawaiian holiday?
We did a show on spam, and I discovered that it's really popular in Hawaii and some other parts of Asia.
I didn't. I think that has something to do with World War II, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are many recipes that call for Scotch bonnet or other spicy peppers. Do you tell you have a high tolerance of spicy food?
I don't think I have a particularly high. I think I'm pretty average. I don't mind something spicy. I like wasabi on sushi. I think it all depends on the thing. I wouldn't rule out spicy food and just say all spicy food I don't like. I think it depends on the specific food. I'll try it. If I don't like it, I don't like it.
You can control it, though.
Well, in Mexico, people think Mexican food is spicy, but in Mexico, it's been my experience that spices are used just to put a little glow in your mouth, that really hot food is generally, you generally find it where there's cheap food and they're trying to cover up the lack of flavor.
It's a socioeconomic thing. If you eat with campesinos, you're going to really burn out your mouth, but if you eat with, you know, urban sophisticated people, you won't.
For Haiti night, you have a recipe for octopus. Now, octopus can be really rubbery. Talia, what are your suggestions for making octopus easy to eat?
Well, I mean, to cook it, you just want to make sure that it stays tender. So you'll boil it and then take it out and take a fork and see how tender it is. I suppose some people will try it and think it's disgusting and rubbery and gross, but I think if you prepare it right, it tastes really good, in my opinion.
That's somewhat exaggerated, you know. I suppose if you do it all wrong, it'll be rubbery. But you know, if you cook it and take it out and recook it, you can, you know, test it. But beyond testing it, it's a good way of cooking it. You know, you cook it for a while, take it out. Cook it a while longer. Octopus is wonderful. She also, I have to say, Talia loved playing with the octopus. She, in fact, put it on her head.
It's a cool-looking animal.
Before you cut off the legs.
Yes.
Mark, you write extensively about French Guyana. What was your experience traveling and eating there like?
Well, I went there twice. Once for the New York Times to cover a civil war in the interior, and the other time also to write about the interior for National Geographic, traveling by dugout canoe on the rivers.
What kind of food is there?
It's an impenetrable rainforest. And, you know, there's game. There's what you can shoot. There's iguana, and there's snake, and there's tapir, and there's the fish in the rivers. And there's a lot of this stuff called quack, which is a thing that's made from grated cassava. You know, it's a very different kind of food, but you don't get it anywhere but there, especially since, you know, they're killing a lot of endangered species.
I'm going to ask you the cliche question, Talia. If you could eat in the cuisine of any country in the world, or if you could actually go there and sample it, where do you think you'd want to go? Have you done French night?
Yes. We actually have a couple different.
Italian night?
We didn't mess around. In France and Italy, whatever region we landed on, we would do. So we actually have two or three French nights and three Italian nights.
Is that where you'd go?
I think it'd be on my list. Definitely. It's really good. I love Chinese food. So I definitely want to have some of that.
Well, there's so many different regions of China. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to choose. We have a great photo of Mark and Talia when Talia was younger, on cooking on our show page. That's at WNYC.org. Also, a number of recipes from this book. And Mark and Talia Kurlansky will be speaking and signing books at the 92nd Street Y tomorrow at noon, and then they'll be speaking and signing books the next day as well. That's Wednesday at noon at the James Beard House at 167 West 12th Street. The book, International Night, which includes over 250 recipes, is published by Bloomsbury. And my great thanks to Mark Kurlansky and Talia Kurlansky for being on our show today.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.